WJCT in Jacksonville. This is our weekly news magazine and the news podcast of the First Coast. I'm your host, Vince Kong, and this is Redux. It's Friday, November 4th. On this episode of Redux, President Barack Obama and the Donald, Republican presidential hopeful Donald Trump, were both on the First Coast yesterday. Not together. And what a week of sports we've had. A week so unbelievable, let's play the game called Spot the Fake Headline. A, the Chicago Cubs end a 108-year-long drought to win the World Series. B, Jacksonville baseball ushers in the era of the jumbo shrimp. And C, genetically modified swine take flight at the X Games. Also, it's official, Google Fiber is dead in Jacksonville. And finally, in the run-up to Tuesday's Election Day, we address the concerns of Northeast Florida voters who are wondering whether their vote is safe. And also, we have an open letter from some of our veteran staff members to millennial voters who are still on the fence about casting their ballot. But first...
Shrimp is the fruit of the sea.
Lemon shrimp, coconut shrimp, pepper shrimp.
Shrimp soup, shrimp stew, shrimp salad, shrimp and potatoes, shrimp burger, shrimp sandwich. That's about it.
That was from the 1995 film Forrest Gump, and, well, that's actually not it. For those keeping score at home in our fake headline contest, the Chicago Cubs are in fact the World Series champs for the first time in more than a century, and for the other headline, no, pigs can't fly. Yet. Full disclosure, I am a Chicago native and a lifelong Cubs fan, so yes, I'm still in shock. As for the other headline, it's true. The Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp are now officially a thing. Former Suns, now Jumbo Shrimp owner Ken Babby appeared on First Coast Connect on Thursday to address fans of the Class 2A minor league team who were about as outraged over the name change as those who felt Pulp Fiction got snubbed for the 1995 Best Picture Oscar, which went to Forrest Gump. Babby had this to say to the roughly 10,000 people who signed an online petition to change the name back.
We're going to actually reach out to those people and say, give us a shot. You know, you don't have to love it. We're not asking you to fall in love with it and wear a hat up to work tomorrow. All we're asking is, come on down to the ballpark, buy a $5 ticket this spring, and just see what it's all about.
But Babby is no stranger to controversial name changes. His other team, up in Ohio, he changed that franchise to the Akron Rubber Ducks, and that team's attendance increased by nearly 30%, so it comes as no surprise what prompted the change down here in Jacksonville.
Let's have some fun with this, because there's serious issues that we're dealing with in this country. Obviously, an election coming up here in a few days. There are, you know, big things going on in town. The conversation about this should be about fun, and that we have a baseball team in town that is serious about having a lot of fun.
The Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp are expected to take the field with their new name, new uniforms, and all new gear in April of 2017. Babby also promised that fresh, locally sourced shrimp will be available at the ballpark. Last week, Google parent company Alphabet made it official. It's suspending the expansion of its super high-speed Google Fiber internet into Jacksonville, as well as 10 other cities. In this week's business brief, analyst John Burr tells WJCT News Director Jessica Palumbo what the decision says about the state of technology and innovation.
John, is Google dissing Jacksonville here by not expanding Google Fiber?
No, they're not. It has nothing to do with that. It's a business decision. It's a lot of dollars and cents.
They announced they're continuing in the cities where they already had it, but all those cities where they were talking about exploring it, which they announced to big fanfare here in Jacksonville, those explorations have stopped.
Right. And I spoke with Angela Mattia. She's a business professor at Jacksonville University. She says there's several factors. You had a recent regulatory ruling by the FCC that makes internet provider business potentially a lot less profitable. Alphabet didn't hit its user targets for that service in the cities where it started at. Laying fiber optic cable all over a city is staggeringly expensive, and the competition in telecommunications is fierce. You got AT&T, you got Comcast, you got Verizon.
Sure.
These are well-established, huge companies which have a huge head start. Last but not least, you have 5G wireless out there in the future. 5G is a service that is probably going to be just as fast as fiber optic. That raises the question, why do we need to install all this fiber optic cable in the first place? Professor Mattia, her specialty is in telecommunications and technology companies. She says tech companies are traditionally very comfortable with just diving into new businesses. It's part of their nimble culture.
When you are a company like Alphabet, they often throw out things to see what they want to kind of get into. They call it their sandbox.
Right.
And then they see kind of what goes and what doesn't. And they're quick to respond, a lot more than a more traditional company like AT&T or Comcast. They are much more prone to being slow and more bureaucratic.
Google changed its name to Alphabet about a year ago, and there are a lot of people who say the bet part of Alphabet stands for the company's ability to jump quickly in and out of stuff.
Okay.
Their driverless car initiative, the so-called Google car, is another example of their willingness to experiment.
Again, they're very nimble, so they're quick to see what seems to be working and what's not, and they typically have a plan to either grow it or they'll abandon it.
What does that say about Google that they were able to make this decision about Google Fiber?
Google and other technology companies, they're maturing. They're becoming these huge corporate entities. They're subject to the desires of their shareholders who want growth, but they also want the tight controls over how the money is spent.
WJCT business analyst John Burr talked with JU business professor Angela Mattia. I'm WJCT news director Jessica Palumbo.
With about 5 million ballots already cast in Florida, the state is on track to beat the all-time record for turnout in a presidential election. As the Tampa Bay Times reports, the surge is partly because of first-time voters and what are considered unlikely voters, or those who didn't vote in the past two elections. As WJCT's Lindsay Kilbride reports, President Barack Obama and Republican Donald Trump both tried to sway those voters during a stop in Jacksonville.
On Thursday, a line stretches as far as the eye can see on the University of North Florida campus. In that line to see Obama speak are many first-time voters, like high school senior and Hillary Clinton supporter Jaquan Baker.
I'm voting because I feel like this election depicts my life. It sets the tone for where for this next generation that's coming up.
College freshman Hayden Centrone says her peers are cynical.
Yeah, most people my age are completely turned off by the election. Like, they just don't want to vote at all because they don't like Hillary or they don't like Trump and they just don't think it's worth it. And they just say their vote doesn't matter anyways.
Inside the rally, Obama agreed with her.
It is great if you've marched for criminal justice reform. But you've got to vote for a president in the Congress and state's attorneys and prosecutors who actually care about disrupting the pipeline from underfunded schools to overcrowded jails.
Across town at his rally, Trump also focused on first-time voters, asking them to raise their hands. 20-year-old Fred Ganim says he's leaning toward Trump, but he went to see Obama, who he says was more qualified than Clinton.
We're stuck with these two people. One is all against females, doesn't respect them, and the other one is just, like, a criminal.
Despite low approval ratings for both candidates, nearly 40% of the Florida electorate already voted. Lindsay Kilbride, WJCT News.
With Donald Trump's proclamations of a rigged election, some Northeast Florida voters are wondering whether their vote is safe. WJCT's Jessica Palumbo takes us inside the Duval County Election Center to find out.
Duval County Election Supervisor Mike Hogan says multiple steps are in place to make sure each person votes only once and no one can tamper with that vote. At polling places, each voter checks in with either a driver's license or one of 11 other types of ID.
And when they swipe it in the machine, it populates who that voter is right away in our database.
The county now knows who's voting and where they're voting. Each voter is given a receipt at check-in, which they take to the ballot table and receive a ballot corresponding to the number on the receipt. That way, if he's sent 500 ballots to a precinct...
At the end of the day, if that precinct tells me that 350 people voted, I should still have 150 unused ballots here. Mm-hmm. So that's my second check.
He can double check either the receipts or a handwritten tally on top of the ballot count itself. When voters put their paper ballots into an electronic tabulator, ballot counts are stored on the machine's thumb drive, which is locked and inaccessible, and it's transmitted to the election center over a private internet connection.
Most importantly, it transfers that data in what we call microburst. So it's very hard for someone to capture that. If they try to capture it, it's going to slow it down a little bit, and we will notice it. And that will make us that much more earnest about checking our real data, which is the hard counts.
Hogan says the county's 247 tabulating machines are tested for accuracy before the election, and Florida law requires random audits of races and precincts before the results are certified.
So you can see, I've given you a whole host of ways that we protect the vote, especially the accuracy of it.
As for mail-in ballots, Hogan says it's an old wives' tale that they're not counted unless the election is close. In reality, those ballots are counted first. Jessica Palumbo, WJCT News.
And finally, for our last segment before Election Day, there are nearly the same number of Floridians ages 20 to 34 than there are over the age of 65. Florida has roughly 2.7 million young voters who are eligible to cast their ballots for a first and maybe even a second time. So just in case you're unsure of how important your vote is in this state, I sat down with WJCT staff members who were on the front line during the 2000 presidential election, an election where every vote mattered, literally.
Hi, I'm Melissa Ross, host and producer of WJCT's First Coast Connect.
I'm Kevin Mershart, producer for First Coast Connect and longtime reporter in Jacksonville and other places.
Hi, I'm David Luckin, music director at WJCT 89.9.
My name is Sid Hoskinson. I am a reporter here at 89.9 WJCT, and I'm also the host of All Things Considered in the afternoons.
Now, when we talk about my most memorable election, that was obviously 2000.
I was the news director at a station called WSCL in Salisbury, Maryland at the time. Locally, we didn't have a lot of big issues to cover. The race was easily won by Al Gore on the state level. Same thing in Delaware. The Senate races weren't all that big. But of course, there was all the intrigue coming out of Florida.
I started at that station, WOFL, in Orlando in August of 2000. And of course, the election was that November. So that was my introduction to Florida, was covering that recount.
During that election that captivated the entire nation. First, it was declared that Al Gore had won the state. But then they took that off the board and said that George Bush had won the state. Then they took that off the board again, and they had to leave it open for a while.
Just hanging on and counting and recounting, it had the whole country on the edge of their seats for months. And we didn't really know what was going to happen until the Supreme Court made their decision.
Well, there's always been partisanship and disagreements. I think this election is different.
The interesting thing about the 2016 race is that this seems to be building up over the last several years. It's gotten far more personal this year, and now the country seems to be more divided, not just divided, but more willing to get very personal in kind of attacks they hear.
The vitriol, the extreme partisanship.
With so little civility, so little decorum, where one candidate is accusing the other one, if they get elected, it will be World War III.
I am often rendered speechless thinking about this election and how much is at stake. And
what will be interesting to see is what happens come November 9th. Will people sit back and say, okay, we're patriotic Americans, we're going to move on and hope for the best for the nation? That will make this a very interesting election to cover even long after we are done with November 8th.
And that's our show. You can find all of our audio and web stories at wjctnews.org. You can also stream this podcast as well as all of our on-air content on the WJCT app, which is available on iTunes and the Google Play Store. And of course, find us on your favorite podcast app and hit subscribe. Ryan Bank is also the host of Indie Endeavor, WJCT's only after-hours program devoted solely to playing and discussing independent music. His show airs Tuesday at 11 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT FM or streaming on our WJCT app. Here's a sample of what you'll hear when you tune in. Enjoy. And that concludes Redux. I'm Vince Kong. Thank you for listening.